What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hump day. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big shout out and thanks to Drs. Danielle Carnival and Dr. Kirobo Jackson for joining me in the last half hour talking about some of the accomplishments of the Biden-Harris administration to combat cancer and to build a healthy economy that works for every American, not just billionaires and the wealthiest corporations, which is all Donald Trump cares about. Sorry we didn't get to some of your questions, texters. I just want to acknowledge Susan texting in from WMDX, as well as Helen texting in on WMDX. They want to talk about causes, and I think it's really interesting. Two of our women listeners wanting to drill down and talk more about causes and prevention of cancer, both calling out different types of causes. One, Susan calling out basically pesticides, herbicides, and all that kind of jazz that we use to keep our perfect green lawns. We've known for a long time that a lot of these can be quite toxic. But, you know, us Americans, we got to have the perfect manicured lawn. Sorry we didn't get to that question, Susan. And Helen wants to talk about plastics. Used to be not so much plastics. Now plastics everywhere. And Susan, curious about research into links between cancer and plastics. Sorry we didn't get there. I will make note of your questions. And the next time we have a fabulous guest like Dr. Danielle Carnival, I will be sure to get those in. And you keep me honest as well. If I forget, please do so. We've got Ben Wickler, chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, coming up this hour. You're not going to want to miss that because we had a little bit of an election yesterday, Brian. Little something going on.
I had an I voted sticker. I wore it to my Green Day concert in Chicago. And a lot of people said, way to go. You voted.
Oh, that's good. How was Green Day, by the way? Tell me about it.
That was fantastic. Quick side note, quick Chicago tip for everybody here. Rather than driving around and paying for parking, why don't you just go and park at a park and ride near a blue line or a red line, which I did. I parked on the street for free at the Loyola stop. I paid $5, and that meant for the entire day, I'd go anywhere in the entire city of Chicago for $5 on public transit. And public transit's fantastic. That being said, Green Day was amazing. They played Dookie and American Idiot back-to-back, and Smashing Pumpkins opened up. I missed Rancid. Rancid was great. It was
the Pumpkins opened?
Yeah, the Pumpkins opened, which is really cool because the Pumpkins, they actually practiced at the Cubby Bear across the street when they were coming up. So they got to play.
Oh, that's cool.
They notably had a lot of good shows in the Metro, which is also across the street, too. But the show was great. I got to be with some of my best friends, and we had a blast.
Well, that's a wonderful belated birthday celebration for you, Brian. I'm so glad you got to enjoy that. I myself was bopping around at some watch parties last night. Listen, it wasn't a full sweep for Maggie. Not all of my preferred outcomes occurred, but I was incredibly proud of the campaigns and the issues that a few of the folks that I endorsed brought to light during this primary campaign. And I was extremely proud of Wisconsinites for turning back two ridiculous cheater pumpkin eater power grab constitutional amendments by the gerrymandered GOP here in our state. That, my friends, was a bullet dodged. And frankly, I was pretty shocked about it. Cannot wait to talk to Ben Wickler at the bottom of the hour about it. Any election outcomes that stuck out to you, Brian, that either surprised you or that you were particularly pleased to see?
Turnout. I was just happy to see turnout. Although it was 26%, it was still better than it has been since like the 60s, I want to say. That's encouraging. Whoever you want to win or not, I'd love turnout.
Yeah, it's there's a dividing line, right, between Democrats and Republicans or progressives, or frankly, between people who are really honest about what's going on and those that tend to obfuscate or lie about it. I've never talked to a Democrat or a pragmatic progressive or a far left progressive who has ever said, you know what, I want fewer people to vote. I've never, ever, 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 not ever once heard anyone make that argument. And yet, it has become very clear our own Todd Alba, former Republican, was in the meetings where Wisconsin Republican leadership said our purpose of voter ID is to make sure that less people vote, fewer people vote, and we don't want young people and black and brown people voting. And that's when Todd Alba, my great colleague, was like, well, I don't think I can be a Republican anymore because that's ridiculous. It is only and ever by conservatives that want fewer people to vote. Otherwise, they would have put the referendum on the November ballot, people. That was the whole game from day one. I agree with you, Brian, seeing that wonderful turnout for this sort of very easy to miss primary election was terrific.
Yeah, I was just very happy about that whole thing. And again, rather than, you know, appealing to the young people or appealing to other people right. with, I don't know, better policies or ideas, they keep going back to, let's just, well, we could do an end around this way. There's so many end arounds. They are out of bounds and down the street at a different stadium thinking they're playing that game because they're so out of bounds as far as what they're trying to do an end around one.
Yeah, it's that's the game book now, right? That's the playbook. That's how Republicans approach these elections. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to do this job so badly. let's fact check stuff. Let's get the actual information out there. I want to give special thanks. A few community advocacy groups had me come and speak to their groups on the referendum questions. I spoke about it at the rally a couple of weeks back in Madison. I want to thank those organizations for understanding the importance of this moment and really getting the word out to people. It was a privilege to be involved in the effort to defeat these cheater, pumpkin eater, power grab. Who cares if emergency funding gets stuck in the Joint Finance Committee because they don't want to be nice and actually compromise and, you know, follow science and expert advice on how to help communities and save Wisconsin lives. Very proud of that outcome. Very pleased, very humbled. Thank you to each and every one of those organizations that helped make that outcome a reality. I did want to also talk about this little tidbit. It happens to be the 89th anniversary of Social Security. Did you know that, Brian? It's the 89th anniversary.
I did see a little blurb about that.
Little blurb. And I thought, well, gee, it being the 89th anniversary of Social Security, it might be a good day to remind everybody listening of what is actually on the ballot. If you're a conservative and you want to defend a vote for Donald Trump, one, you can call me up, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Because the question I have for you is, do you plan to cash your Social Security checks? Do your parents receive Social Security? Do you think Social Security is a good thing? I mean, even Friedrich Hayek thought Social Security was a good thing. This is like the capitalist of capitalists. And he has been quoted, he is on the record stating from way back in his writings that yes, government should provide some modicum of support like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, doesn't call them by those names, of course, because those things are really difficult for laborers or the labor class to access on their own. He understands that capitalism isn't good at that. That's Friedrich Hayek, for crying out loud. So on this, the 89th anniversary of Social Security, it is an excellent foil to remind us all what's on the ballot. Because here's the scoop. What Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and the Heritage Foundation and Project 2025 and all of their affiliated conservative blogosphere organizations want to do, they want to distract you with all the culture war stuff. And that is dangerous, and that is bad, and it's despicable, and it's unkind, and it's cruel, and it has no relationship to what true Christian values are. They want to distract you with all that stuff so that when you take your eye off the ball, they will implement, as Trump has promised to do, billions more in tax cuts for billionaires and the country's wealthiest corporations who have posted record profits throughout this entire period of economic recovery while middle-class Americans suffered. Kamala Harris will never raise taxes on families earning less than $400,000 a year, but she damn will raise taxes on families and households earning more than $400,000. And we all should be able to say, indeed, that is right and good. And you have to ask yourself, well, why is it that Donald Trump would increase the national deficit by $8 trillion to give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to billionaires, millionaires, and the corporations that they own? Why would he do that? What's the long game here? Well, first of all, he himself is a billionaire, so it's perfectly in his self-interest. He's reducing his own tax rates, right? A lot of the billionaire class, yeah, they want lower taxes. I think most of us would rather pay less than more. But what's actually the long game? Yeah, it's cutting your friends' breaks. It's cronyism. It's deal-making. But the long game here, folks, has always been the same. Donald Trump, Ron Johnson, Eric Hovde, and a lot of them have one goal, and that is to dismantle Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That is what the long game is here, because if you reduce the amount of revenue we get, because we will not tax billionaires and the wealthiest corporations and make them pay their fair share, eventually those programs will get shut down. Ron Johnson said it out loud. Donald Trump has said it out loud. Quote, there's a lot you can do in terms of cutting Americans' hard-earned Social Security benefits. It's good to remind ourselves on this, the 89th anniversary of Social Security, the stakes of this election. When we come back, little news about Hunter Biden. We'll talk about it next. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's not good. It hasn't been good. We've been against it.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. We'll talk about the election results from yesterday, as well as the DNC coming up next week. I'm excited. I know you are as well. But first, wanted to address breaking news late yesterday. The New York Times, apparently, I believe in an exclusive, had pursued vigorously open records requests, FOIA requests, from the State Department relating to Hunter Biden. And apparently, the records which the State Department had been sitting on for years. Again, they received the request. The State Department within the U.S. government has, I think they're like either the second biggest backlog or the third biggest backlog of open records requests. And I'll talk more about that in a second. So, requests come in, they get put in the queue, and it takes years. So we'll talk about whether or not, you know, the timing of the release of the records is something to read into. But spoiler alert, it's not. But it took a number of years. Anyways, the New York Times finally gets these documents. And what it shows is that Hunter Biden himself wrote a letter to the then U.S. ambassador to Italy in 2016, asking the ambassador to help him in service of his work for the Ukrainian company Burisma to help him help Burisma get in touch with the right government officials in Italy for a project Burisma wanted to start in Italy. So basically he's saying, hey, can you help us get through the layers of government in Italy so that Burisma can talk to the right government officials in Italy to start this project? That was the point. Officials in the State Department basically didn't do anything. They got the request. At least one Commerce Department official said, this is a quote, I want to be careful about promising too much. This is a Ukrainian company and purely to protect ourselves, meaning the U.S. government. We should not be actively advocating with the government of Italy without the company going through the DOC Advocacy Center, the DOC Advocacy Center, referring to the Department of Commerce program that supports American companies that are doing business with foreign governments. Burisma, not an American company. And what came of this request from Hunter Biden to the State Department for assistance on behalf of Burisma, a Ukrainian company in Italy? Nothing. So that's the big spoiler alert. This is not good. Let me be clear. That's dumb. Hunter Biden should have never done that. I could also say pretty clearly that I don't think Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, should have started a business that he had never engaged in before and gotten $20 billion from Saudi Arabia within months of his dad leaving the White House. That's actually something, okay? That's something. $20 billion from Saudi Arabia to Jared Kushner, and he's making tens of millions of dollars in fees managing that money for the Saudis. By the way, he's never managed money before professionally. That's something. Should Hunter Biden have asked the State Department when Joe Biden was vice president to help him get a hookup in Italy to help this Ukrainian company do business in Italy? No, he shouldn't have. But as compared to the $20 billion the Saudis gave Jared, here's what the State Department helped Hunter get. Nothing. So, yeah. Now, there's lots of detail about this, but that is the bottom line. And then I want to share this. Obviously, if you listen to the show much at all, you know that I've spent nearly 15 years working in government. I've worked at the federal government level. I've advised state government officials, and I worked in local government for a very long time. So I know a little bit about what I'm talking about here. One of my specific duties in each and every one of these roles and jobs dealt with document requests from news agencies in some way, shape, or form. I either had to respond to them because the department I worked for received a request, or most recently, as Corporation Counsel for Milwaukee County, I assisted departments in figuring out how to respond to records requests. Sometimes they're vague. Sometimes they ask for millions and millions of documents, and it's just impossible. Here's what I'll tell you based on over 15 years of experience dealing with this stuff. I guarantee you there is a department within the State Department that gets sent every single open records request that they receive, and there are a bunch of not political appointees, just lifetime civil servants, bureaucrats, if you will, that are experts in open records requests that are responsible for processing the U.S. State Department's open records requests. Guarantee you, there is a department, there's a department in the Department of Energy, the EPA, literally every department. And they probably have sub-departments that deal with open records requests in the various offices of the State Department. Are you getting where I'm going here? So the request comes in and they get
Kafka's nightmare.
Yes, it is a Kafka-esque nightmare. Perfectly put, Brian. And so James Comer is going to lose his bananas, lose his marbles over this. They're going to pound the table about the request, and Joe Biden was vice president. The timing, they didn't respond. None of this matters because Joe Biden didn't know about the request. The letter that Hunter said, he didn't know about it, and there's no evidence to indicate otherwise. Didn't know about it. His son did some really stupid stuff. He was a druggie. He bought a gun. He didn't pay his taxes. He's going to go to prison. Dumb guy. Dad didn't know about it. So that's thing one. Thing two, nothing came of it. Zero, nada, zippo, zilch. Unlike the $20 billion that went from Saudi Arabia to Jared Kushner. Yeah, that's something. This was nothing. And third, nothing to see here, because the timing is not the product of anything that Joe Biden did, said, or controlled. It was a bunch of longtime civil servants whose only job it is to process tens of thousands of open records requests. It got slotted in just like every other request, and it took a while to get to it. That's it. Nothing more to see here, folks. I'll be interested. We'll get some sound from James Comer. You know he's going to give a press conference and lose his marbles. It'll happen. We'll get that for you when it does, because that's as sure as the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. And it sure is Ben Wickler, chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, joining us up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Keep it locked, folks. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
So you get nothing. You lose.
Look over yonder.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I am really excited to welcome my next guest to the show. Hey, Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Congratulations and welcome.
Hey, Maggie. Thank you so, so much. Congratulations to everyone in our state who defeated this attempt to undermine our democracy with these constitutional amendments. This is a day for celebration. I'm so fired up.
I am too. I had to read the result a few times last night because I thought mine eyes hath deceived me, because I think this is really an extraordinary outcome. I'm pretty sure you agree. Tell people why this is a bit surprising.
Well, 12 of the last 13 constitutional amendments in Wisconsin have passed. Normally, it is almost a routine thing. The legislature passes a constitutional amendment. They do it again the next legislative session. It goes to voters, and the voters pass it on through. That is how it worked as recently as this spring. And we thought, you know, and I will say, internal polls, when we started polling on this, it looked like it might happen again this time. And then the voters got involved. Let me start with Governor Evers sounded the alarm on these terrible constitutional amendments. They were meant to take away not just his authority, but any governor's authority over emergency funds that come into the state, as though somehow a committee of the state legislature might be faster and more responsive than the executive branch of our state government that's supposed to execute on things. So he raised the alarm. State legislators on the Democratic side started organizing town halls and speaking out all over Wisconsin. All these organizations, from nonpartisan groups like the League of Women Voters and the Farmers Union to Wisconsin Conservation Voters and Power to the Polls and so many others, they jumped in. And the Democratic Party of Wisconsin in June at our state convention, we voted to endorse against a vote no on the constitutional amendments. And our volunteers have knocked on hundreds of thousands of doors since the convention and spread the word all over Wisconsin. And then when the votes came rolling in, this was not a Wisconsin nail biter. This was not less than one percentage point. This was double digits. This was a massive blowout decision that made it crystal clear that we want our government to work, to function, and we don't want more Republican power grabs.
Yeah, I was so excited to hear that outcome, that it was by such a margin. And I think it really shows that when Wisconsin voters are given the actual information about these kinds of referenda to change and alter our Constitution forever, when people get the right information, they are smart enough to know when it's a dumb idea. And they're smart enough to know when Republicans are frankly cheating and trying to not just usurp and tie the hands of Governor Evers and all other governors about how to get critical federal emergency money into our local communities, but that Republicans don't want to play by the rules. They simply couldn't get it done through the regular legislative process. So they were trying to cheat us and trick us. And of course, they always use that confusing language on those referendum questions. But bravo and congrats to all of Wisconsin. Congrats to Wisconsin voters for seeing through the baloney. It's a good day.
It's a good day. It's a good day. And I mean, if you look at the map, this is a statewide victory of the kind that, you don't often see these days. I think we won like half the counties in the state. So, you know, land doesn't vote, but you can see all these counties that voted no. And then we won by 14% in one ballot initiative and 15% in the other. Those are non-Wisconsin-y kinds of margins. But what they represent is a rejection of the politics of the power grab. We've seen over and over the gerrymandering, the lame duck special session that Scott Walker called, all these attempts to rip away powers that voters decided who they wanted to wield. And when voters speak, they want to be heard. I hope Republicans are taking notes, because I think if they keep trying to do this and override the will of the people, they're just going to keep getting brushed back. And it would be a lot more sensical for us to have debates about actual policies as opposed to whether state legislators should rip away powers from statewide elected officials.
Part of a long line of Republicans simply not having better ideas or being able to have a more informed debate and convince people that their way is better. No, they'll just cheat and change the rules so that they can just force their way onto Wisconsin voters. We don't like it one little bit. Of course, Wisconsin voters also remembering the complete inaction of the GOP gerrymandered all to heck legislature during COVID, 300 plus days of doing nothing while a global pandemic was claiming lives of their friends, families, and loved ones. They remembered that. Nobody wants more of that kind of red tape in this state, least of all me and you, Ben. So again, congrats. Great work on defeating that initiative. Any big surprises for you coming out of yesterday's election?
Well, I'm joining you from Eau Claire, Wisconsin right now. I'm here at the Eau Claire Democratic Party headquarters, and Rebecca Cook is the Democratic nominee. This was an 8-point victory in the primary, a very clear decision by Democrats to send Rebecca Cook up against Derek Van Orden. He is a disaster. And now we have a chance to flip the third congressional district and potentially the first congressional district. And maybe, you know, who knows? Lightning can strike, candidates can catch fire. We're already seeing that with Kristen Lierley, maybe more. So we might go from being a 6-2 Republican state in the United States House to being a state that actually has a balanced delegation to Congress. And on the Republican side, this guy, Tony Weed, who is one major qualification, was being endorsed by Donald Trump. He's a full-on MAGA, ultra-MAGA swamp guy.
Yes.
When you look at his politics. And that's who Republicans are putting up in the 8th Congressional District. And then in the state legislative races across the state, we have our full class of nominees, and we have Democrats in 97 of the 99 assembly districts running. Republicans only have candidates in 84. They've given up on big chunks of the state. And in the state Senate, we have candidates in all 15 races. Republicans only have candidates in 11. So this year is a year of opportunity. It's Democrats on offense. And it's Democrats who are all clear and united about what we're fighting for. We're fighting for freedom. We're fighting for a fundamental American ideal. And Republicans, I think, are about to learn how people feel when you rip their freedoms away.
Yeah, it's really a year of opportunity. I agree with you, Ben. Thinking about a Wisconsin congressional delegation that better reflects the true makeup of our state, right? That we can start to see some fairness in what our representative team looks like in the nation's capital, I think is a hopeful moment. And I think, and I would hope, that well-intended conservatives, more traditional Republicans, also see that as an improvement. It is my deeply held belief that when we have districts that are fairly drawn, when we have contended elections, when we have the clash of ideas, when those debates happen in good faith, that policy is better. And that requires fair maps and a diverse set of representatives that reflect the diversity of viewpoints in our state, not a rigged system that presumes an outcome before an election is had and then claims it's been stolen if the presumed outcome doesn't happen. That is good for democracy. It's good for conservatives. It's good for liberals. It's good for all of us. I will say I disagree with you about one thing. Tony Weed's got great hair. That might be a congressional qualification. Great hair. Nice head of hair on that guy. But I agree. We start looking at the third CD, the eighth CD, the first CD. There is potential all up and down the ticket. But let's talk DNC, Ben, because I am so excited. Are you as pumped as I am? I cannot wait to get in the room, if you know what I mean.
I'm so pumped. I'm beyond fired up. I know how the folks feel in those giant roaring crowds, because I've been one of those folks. I was at the vice president's first rally in West Allis, Wisconsin, once she became the Democratic nominee. I was at her rally in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, 12,000 people in a field in a rural part of the state. And now I'm going to be at the national convention, and I know that the energy is going to raise the roof on the whole place. Democrats are so united. They're so fired up. They're so clear. They're so joyful. They're having fun. And this is a kind of set of feelings that more people want to be part of. You have independents moving towards Democratic candidates in droves. A lot of Republicans are thinking, do I really want to be with these, you know, gloomy whiners that are trying to rip apart our freedom so that they can have power even when voters don't want it? Or do I want to join the fun people who are inviting everyone to a giant party? That's actually a pretty easy decision for folks. And what we already know is that this convention is going to showcase a set of values that resonate with everyone around hard work, around freedom, around opportunity, and a rejection of the kind of division and attempts to control people's personal lives that we see from Republicans like Trump and J.D. Vance and their whole Project 2025, MAGA Goon Squad. I think there's a real sense that we can leave all that stuff behind us. We can go forward, which is, of course, our state motto in Wisconsin. And I think that's what you're going to see in Chicago.
Yeah, forward ho, because here we go. That is so critical. Frankly, I think they should bring back that old ad from the 80s with the like old kind of chunky accountant looking white guy with the glasses, like sitting right next to someone's bed with like a notepad, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the government incursion into people's private lives, into their healthcare decisions, into families' decisions about how they want to raise their children. That is wrong, wrong, wrong. And Americans, again, I think well-meaning conservatives that are honest with themselves, they believe in freedom and to be true to those principles and values. That means only one kind of vote is possible this November. The way I put it is I want to cry like it was 2008, not cry like it's 2016. That's what I'm looking forward to. I also think, Ben, I wanted to get your input. It's just genius for Kamala Harris to be coming to Milwaukee during the DNC to have her own little mini rally at the Fiserv. I think it's a great bookend, brilliant move. I was a little surprised, of course, because she's going to obviously speak at the DNC on Thursday. But what did you make of that move? I think it's terrific.
I think it's so good, and it's bold, and it's excited. You know what I mean? It's the kind of idea that builds excitement. It really builds a contrast between the Republicans that came to town and held a convention where, you know, Hulk Hogan may have ripped his shirt open, but for the most part, it was all these Republicans who were cheering on people who wanted to mess with everybody else's lives. It wasn't the kind of event that brings people together. And now we'll see Vice President Harris and Governor Walz right in the same city in Milwaukee, lighting people up with a vision that actually brings everyone together. That's a split screen that really says everything. And then they'll come right down to Chicago and officially become the standard bearers and lay out their vision in their big speeches. This is the kind of thing that you're going to see, I think, more of from a campaign that's willing to take risks, to excite people, to do surprising and new stuff. And that, I think, embodies this idea of the future and moving forward and bringing joy and energy.
Yeah, Ben, I want you to be sure that you tell the vice president something for me. And that's, I was using Beyonce's Freedom for my intro music for this show before they discovered it and started using it at the rallies. Boy, we know Julia Louis-Dreyfus is going to be speaking to the group of women governors. There are rumors that Beyonce may even make an appearance at the DNC. Again, all of these indicators of excitement and enthusiasm. For you, Ben, on a personal level, what has this been like? It's been such a roller coaster for me. I have had the entire range of human emotions over the last 2 months. For you personally, given what you do for a living, such a critical moment, what's it been like to go from, frankly, a bit of despondency and a lot of anxiety to this place of hope and joy?
It really has been a roller coaster. I all the way through, I've been really clear about why I'm doing this work as the Democratic State Party chair, because I know that the stakes for the kind of future my kids will grow up in and every kid will grow up in are so vast. But there were times when it felt like the Democrats were more interested in arguing with each other than they were in organizing people to win the election. And the change since that extraordinary selfless moment when the president decided to pass the torch, the change has been electrifying. We're united as a party. We're united about our vision. Liberating, and people are so fired up and ready to roll up their sleeves. And now you can feel the wind at our backs and the excitement that's raising joy to the rooftops.
Selflessness, kindness, and common sense are what Americans want, and Kamala Harris is the right one to bring it to us. Thanks so much. That's chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler. I'll see you next week. Hope to get you on the show during the convention, Ben.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Maggie.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with everybody, grab somebody. It's the Maggie Dawn Show. We're celebrating. It was a good election day yesterday. My thanks to Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, for carving some time out. Brian, we were having a little chuckle in the break because one of the Republican primaries had the best head-to-head matchup. I thought it was like a typo when I saw it. In case you folks don't know what Brian and I found worthy of a serious chuckle, was this District 88 in the state assembly. Had two Republicans going head-to-head in the primary. The gentlemen's names were Phil Collins and Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah,
I think, to no one's surprise, Ben Franklin won. I mean, yeah. If I'm voting, I'm probably voting for the guy named Ben Franklin.
I'm going with Ben Franklin over to Phil Collins every day. I mean, now, if it was Peter Gabriel, that would be an election.
Yes, I want to see the Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel primary head-to-head matchup.
If you are listening if you're in the listening audience and you or someone you know is named Peter Gabriel, I would recommend moving to the 88th district and possibly running. But you have to wait till Benjamin Franklin is gone because he just beat Phil Collins. Darn it. We can't retrofit primary. This. This is the reason why you primary. Go and get a time machine. Good reason.
Well, again, it was really an incredible primary day. I wanted to give a special shout out to Brady Coulthard, who is running for the assembly. Young man, he has done work for Civic Media. I met him through Civic Media. Brady campaigned his heart out. I think he did just an incredible job. He knocked more doors than any of his opponents in the primary by a huge margin. Campaigned his heart out. He did lose in the primary yesterday. But as I said to Brady, very rarely do people win their first time out of the gate in an election unless they're sitting on a caboodle of money. One of his opponents had a caboodle of money. Brady did not. But he ran the sort of campaign that builds people's awareness about what you stand for and your values. And I think Brady will find sweet, sweet victory the next time he decides to throw his hat in the ring. So I wanted to say very personally to Brady, congratulations, my friend. You ran an incredible campaign. And though you lost, you will fight again. And I predict the next thing you run for, Brady, you will win. It is all incredibly important experience to gain.
Yeah. Now, knowing Brady myself, anybody who knows him or has met him, it's just a joy to meet that kid. And he's a really hard worker and has some really good ideas. He's just a wonderful person. I like that kid.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of those people when you meet him, you can just feel the nice, right? Not all of us come across with that nice vibe, but that is 100% Brady Coulthard. I also wanted to give my congratulations and thanks to Mr. Ted Chisholm and David Cullen, who ran, I think, a really important primary contest for the Milwaukee County Treasurer's Office. Ted, I think, embodies what we need more of in government, and that is to, on occasion, challenge these long-term incumbents in some of these positions, bring some issues to the fore. I think it can help incentivize and catalyze those incumbents, if and when they do win re-election, to maybe, you know, get a little fire under the booty and look at their jobs and their positions, the trust that is placed in their hands by voters, with fresh eyes. Again, that has been sort of my theme this entire primary season with the people that we've had on the show, and that is that change is good. Whether you're a conservative, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a liberal, whether you don't care about this very much, I think we can agree that passing the torch and having people with fresh ideas and a new approach is a really, really good thing in government. I think it's also what has made people at times disengaged, Brian, right? It's like if it's the same old faces and it's the same old arguments and nothing's really new, it's easy to tune that out. And I think what Kamala Harris's campaign for president embodies in some ways is the idea that we can change, we can turn the page from the sort of political discourse that has been so detrimental to our democracy. We can turn the page on that discourse. We can move forward, that there can be change, that we don't have to simply accept the old guys, the old boys club, all of that kind of thing. Frankly, you put Kamala Harris and Donald Trump on a split screen, and it's like, well, geez, I'll go with the younger lady who seems to have her wits about her, who wants to take the country in a direction that will work for the middle class, work fairly for all of us. When we look at some of these local elections in this primary, I think we saw people stepping up, challenging some establishment candidates, bringing issues to the fore. So I also want to congratulate Jared Anderson and Representative Ryan Clancy. I have my differences with him, but they ran a tough campaign. They called each other out. That's what democracy is about. Mr. Anderson conceded the race. Ryan's got his seat back, and he's going to go do what he's going to do in the assembly. That's the way this is supposed to work, right? And that's the way that people in my position and Brian's job should also be acting, right? That when our preferred candidates don't win, we congratulate them anyways, right?
You mean like adults?
Right. That's exactly right. So my congratulations to Ryan Clancy, but of course, my thanks and congratulations to Jared Anderson for bringing these issues to the fore. I think more people know more about both Jared Anderson and Ryan Clancy. I think that brings about greater accountability for elected officials, right? When people don't know what you're saying and doing, there's a little less accountability. So every single point of engagement and moment of engagement that these, I'm going to call them upstart candidates, brought to this primary election, I think they also deserve big credit when it comes to our biggest win from yesterday, and that is defeating the referendum, because it drove engagement, it drove awareness, it got people excited, and it got people into the voting booths where we all belong. That is how our voice is heard. That is how all of this big, beautiful, messy democracy thing works best, when you're engaged, when you're aware, and when you're voting. So again, my thanks to Amelia Herrida. My congrats to Saquana Taylor. Thanks to Jared Anderson. Congrats to Clancy. Brady, congrats. Ted, congrats and thanks. That's going to do it for me. I'll be back tomorrow. We got all kinds of fun stuff cooking. Tom Wozowitz will join me. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together. Stay tuned. The Devil's Advocates are up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
know what? I'm happy.